Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with 120 world leaders converging on the United Nations for a week-long general debate and speak with the nation's UN correspondent Barbara Crissett. A longtime foreign correspondent for the New York Times, she will discuss the week's agenda and the prospects for reform at the UN itself, as well as the re-emergence of a Cold War divide on the Security Council over what to do about Syria, which the UN's own envoy described as extremely bad and getting worse. Then, following remarks by Mitt Romney on 60 Minutes about his vague voucher plan, we will look into the role that the future of Medicare will play in the election as the once 20-point lead that Romney had with seniors is diminishing rapidly. Jonathan Oberlander, a professor of social medicine and health policy at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, joins us to discuss the fallout from Romney's remark that the emergency room is an option for the millions without health insurance. Then finally, we will get an optimistic vision of political and social change from best-selling author Stephen Johnson. His new book is Future Perfect: The Case for Progress in a Networked Age, and we will discuss his notion that peer progressives can use the internet to build a society where power is distributed more equally amongst a self-regulated network of peers who contribute to the greater good according to where their strengths lie. Joining us now is Barbara Crissett, who's a writer on international affairs and the United Nations correspondent of The Nation magazine and author of several books on Asia. She was the New York Times chief correspondent in Southeast Asia and South Asia from 1984 to 1991 and later the Times bureau chief at the United Nations. She has also been a diplomatic correspondent in Washington and a reporter in Central America, the Caribbean, and Canada. In 2010 and 2011, Ms. Crissett reported and wrote the State of World Population Reports for the United Nations Population Fund, the first focused on women in post-conflict areas and the second on the world at 7 billion. Welcome to Background Briefing, Barbara Crissett.
Thank you.
And, of course, this convergence of 120 world leaders in New York is referred to apparently as diplomacy's annual trade fair. But, of course, it competes, does it not, with Bill Clinton's global initiative?
It does and it doesn't. I think within the UN family, I mean, there is some connection because, obviously, Clinton is focused on some of the issues the UN is also trying to deal with, for example, Haiti. And a number of issues in Africa on the development side. The debate, and it's not really a debate, you know, it's people showcasing for their home TV networks what their government policies are and what they don't like in the world and what they're proposing. So they kind of overlap in some areas, but you're going to get other issues, nuclear, things like Syria and the future of the Middle East in general. Are issues that really go beyond the Clinton initiative. So that's held at the same time, but it's not competing.
Well,
what's competing is the American election. I will get to that.
Well, apparently that's competing for the president's time. What is happening is being referred to as drive by diplomacy, where tonight he hosts a reception for world leaders, and then he speaks tomorrow, and then he's gone, leaving the rest to his Secretary of State, to Hillary Clinton.
Right. Now, this used to be the pattern over some years, and Obama really reversed this. The Obama administration has been much more plugged into the United Nations, sometimes quietly because of the obvious criticism from those who think that the UN should be not only neglected but moved out of the country. So last year he spent several days, he did a number of things, he spoke at a variety of forums. This year, because of the pressure of the election, and also because some smart foreign leaders know that now is not the time to try to get anything big out of the administration because they just simply want to stay in power, and the real moves will come after November if they're going to be any.
Well, with the exception of Prime Minister Netanyahu.
Well, yes. He obviously wanted to talk to the president. As everyone knows who follows this, relations have not been good between those two people, President Obama and Netanyahu. Can't speak for the whole Israeli population or the American, but the Obama administration is perceived by Romney neglect of Israel the Republicans are trying to use as a campaign issue. So now is not the time, really, to promote a meeting that may not go very well. And this is the case with probably almost everything else. A lot of the contentious issues in the foreign policy debate, such as it is in the United States, are that somehow Obama's being soft on the rest of the world, and that they're not carrying a big stick, they're not threatening war, they're not arming Syrian rebels, and so on and so on. So Obama has to walk carefully at the UN while still making a commitment to taking part in UN activities at a level that hasn't been seen in some years.
Again, I'm speaking with Barbara Cassett, who is a writer on international affairs and the United Nations correspondent of The Nation magazine, and she was the New York Times chief correspondent in Southeast Asia and South Asia and a bureau chief at the United Nations. Now, before the meeting, the general debate convenes this week, Ban Ki-moon, the United Nations Secretary General, said the deteriorating situation in Syria will be foremost on our minds. And then just as the meetings begin, the UN Special Envoy to Syria, Lakhdar Brahimi, says the situation is extremely bad and getting worse in Syria. But it's almost, isn't it, then becomes a kind of metaphor for the UN's inability to deal with the big things on its plate. Nobody, in spite of all the debates that are going to take place, nobody expects any change on the ground.
No, right, not now. And it's not, you know, again, when the UN phrase is used, in this case, it's the UN Security Council. The Secretary General has no power to do what he would or would not want to do in Syria. Lakhdar Brahimi has no power. Lakhdar Brahimi is a very good listener. He's very different from some of the other envoys the UN has used over the years. He, first of all, he's an Arabic speaker, a native Arabic speaker. He can get involved in conversations in a way that some other people can't. But he listens and he thinks it out, and then he offers some suggestions afterwards. He's not a character who walks in with a big plan. And this has been the situation now. But even that aside, he has discovered that, I mean, people are dying by the thousands over a period of time now, and there really is no easy way out for the Security Council, as long as the Russians and the Chinese and others reject the idea of any kind of outside intervention.
Well, apparently the Russians and the Chinese are already balking at a last-minute final document of reform of the Security Council itself. And apparently they feel that references to human rights are tantamount to foreign meddling in their internal affairs.
You know, in many ways, it started with the late Ambassador Richard Holbrooke, who decided in the late 1990s, around the turn of the century, that that it was necessary to start looking at the kind of human issues that really do affect security and international affairs. He, for example, wanted to bring AIDS into the question of what AIDS was doing to African societies into the United Nations. There was horror at this. Then they moved on later on to women, the protection of women in conflict, and more than that, it's not just looking after the women, it's getting them to the peace table. They have to rebuild the societies. They're the key to, you know, a social structure. Again, there were outcries from all over. The Vietnamese were on the council at the time. And I remember asking the Vietnamese ambassador, surely you're not for the abuse of women. No, no, he said, this is not the issue. The issue is these things should never be in the Security Council. They should be in the Economic and Social Council. And that has been pretty much not very productive. So there have been two things, the question of who sits on the Security Council, which is another issue, and then the question of what subjects should come up. And in many ways, the Syrian problem has been bedeviled by Libya. I mean, before we get to the ambassador being killed, this is long ago. The fact that a number of countries, including India, which is supposed to be an ally of the U.S. of some sorts, thought that the Security Council said one thing with Libya, that is human protection, and then did something else. They overthrew Gaddafi. I mean, that is to say the countries. So everything there's a lot of distrust and a lot of fundamental discussion about and dissent about what the Security Council should be doing anywhere at, on any issue, and it's come to a head in Syria.
So what did you witness today, Barbara Crissett? You were in a meeting, right, with some policy wonks, and was Ahmadinejad the...
With Ahmadinejad, the president, yes, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran, met with an absolutely stellar group of American experts on nuclear issues, on U.S.-Iranian relationships, on the Middle East in general. And it was a very interesting meeting. He also spoke to reporters earlier in the day. I was able to go by good luck to the meeting with the American specialists. And his message was, again, giving nothing and asking that the U.S. basically accept Iran as a major power in the Middle East, that the U.S. back off from the Middle East. He reiterated his objection to Israel. He didn't go so far as he sometimes does in crude language, but, you know, he's basically saying the Zionist entity. He doesn't even call it by its name. He simply repeated the fact that he wants respect, he wants power, he wants everybody else to back off and let the great Persian Empire, it amounts to, tell everybody how to run Afghanistan and the Persian Gulf. And so it doesn't leave much space for conversation with him.
So when apparently Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad said that Iran is neutral in the Syrian civil war, did anybody challenging him?
Well, yes. I mean, people asked him for what Iran's policy actually was. He did say, I took one note that was interesting. He did say something about the Syrian people should decide on their own government. Nobody from outside should tell them what to do. And one can interpret that various ways. He wasn't then, that didn't, you know, questions didn't follow up. Was that a slight hint that maybe there's got to be something other than the current regime or not? I mean, we're doing this through an interpreter, of course, because he was speaking in Farsi. So he did leave the understanding that there is a terrible problem there that is not being solved by either the government or the rebels. And, however, he did call attention to the dangers, and I think this is in other countries also, the dangers in that region of allowing increasingly militant organizations to come to the fore in Syria, and that this is going to create, he talked about creating tens of thousands of potential terrorists that could act anywhere in the region, and including in the United States.
But apparently he refused to say whether Iran would accept a government not led by the Assad regime, my understanding.
No, he didn't. He just talked loosely about people choosing their own governments. And, you know, it's hard to say whether he was basically saying, you know, everyone, he basically said the U.S. should back out of the Persian Gulf. This is not new, that Iran kept the peace there for eons, and that it can keep the peace again if everybody just goes away. And the same thing with Afghanistan, that they could do quite a lot. And they did do quite a lot in helping, you know, after the American invasion to try to reconstruct Afghanistan. The Iranians did, I mean, everybody agrees, did play a large part in that. And so he wants really more of a role in Afghanistan as well as the Persian Gulf.
Well, in the last couple of minutes, Barbara Crissett, what's likely to happen this week? I understand Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas is expected to propose to the United Nations that they make Palestine a non-member state.
Right. This is slightly down from what he... I'm sorry, because I've been talking all day. Slightly down from what he asked for last year, which was a seat in the General Assembly and basically recognition as a nation, and that's put very crudely. But this time they want... A step up. They do have observer status at the UN as the PLO, but he wants a step up to recognition as a state with observer status. However, what happened last year could be repeated or not, which is that in the end he backed off, pushing the issue. But he is speaking this week. Ahmadinejad is speaking on Wednesday. Obama speaks tomorrow. There are quite a lot of people. And don't forget the Burmese president who has allowed all these reforms to take place. He's an uncharismatic, much quieter person obviously Aung San Suu Kyi is the heroine, and he will be speaking, I think, next week or at the end of this week. So, you know, there are a lot of things happening in the UN that may not get reported because the Americans will have gone away. At least the president and his group will.
But Dora Aung San Suu Kyi is there, right? She's very much in the limelight, isn't she?
Well, she's around, but you know, she has no
official position
to speak.
Yes,
you know, because the president of Myanmar, Burma, will speak, and she's been around. She met the Secretary General, I think, on Friday. She's been feted around Washington and various think tanks and organizations. She is a remarkable person, and it, you know, deserves the attention that she's getting. But the question is, as Secretary Clinton said, that the purists can't be allowed to push the Burmese, that is the government, too much too fast, or the military could step in again. She doesn't say it that way, but that's the unspoken problem. So praise Aung San Suu Kyi, help her. And Aung San Suu Kyi has gone out of her way to talk about how she's getting along with the president, how she's getting along with the military and in the parliament. And you know, she's turned, as Hillary Clinton talked about her, from a symbol of Burmese freedom to a statesperson, a stateswoman, a statesman. And this is very important for Burma. And so the play between the two of them is going to be very interesting.
Well, just in the last 30 seconds, I'm sorry to rush, but tell me, given that they can't do anything about this bleeding wound of Syria, but there's also serious rumors of war between Israel and Iran, are they going to be talking about that big reality?
Well, they'll all talk about it. I mean, Ahmadinejad took the position today that even if Iran's a big country, he said they can attack us and it won't make any difference. Basically, I mean, they will put out positions. What they call the general debate, as I said at the start of this, is really not a debate. It's, you know, laying out of positions, and so people, you know, sort of comb them for something possibly new, and that's about as far as it will go.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us, Barbara Cassette.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Barbara Cassette, who's a writer on international affairs and the United Nations correspondent of The Nation magazine and author of several books on Asia. She was the New York Times chief correspondent in Southeast Asia and South Asia from 1984 to 1991 and later the Times bureau chief at the United Nations. She's also been a diplomatic correspondent in Washington and a reporter in Central America, the Caribbean, and Canada. In 2010 and 2011, Ms. Cassette reported and wrote the State of World Population Reports for the United Nations Population Fund, the first focused on women in post-conflict areas and the second on the world at 7 billion. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about how Mitt Romney is losing the senior vote.
Strikes now, so it would strike.